Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. It's Monday and my voice, excuse me, my voice is a little bit croaky, not because it was a very late night at the incredible ABSA Jewish Achievers Awards last night, but I think this is just the dusty weather here in Johannesburg. So please do bear with me, and we're going to be bringing you an absolutely incredible show today. It's National Diabetes Month, and we'll be chatting with Dr. Nigel Plummer, microbiologist, expert in the field of probiotics, and owner of Proven. We're going to be chatting all things relating to our gut health and diabetes. So let us have your questions on 061-895-1019, and we'll do our best to get Dr. Plummer to answer them. This is a show I'm really looking forward to us, so stay with us.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Monday morning and you're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle. It is the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. I'm joined in studio by our fantastic controller, Craig Guthrie, making sure everything runs smoothly. And we're bringing on our guest shortly, Dr. Nigel Plummer. He's a microbiologist. He's an expert in the field of probiotics, gut health, and he's the owner of Proven. We're in Diabetes Month, and for me, this is something that really is close to my heart because thankfully I'm not diabetic, but I do have hyperglycemia, and it was very challenging growing up managing my energy expenditure and my food intake, my sugar intake, making sure that I didn't do anything that spiked my blood sugar. And I know that since my gut health has improved, that aspect of my health has improved. So I took a little time over the weekend to put some questions together for Dr. Plummer. And we'd also like to have your questions. So WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. This is such an important topic because our blood sugar balance, diabetes, or even, hyperglycemia can really affect our quality of life, our health, and our longevity. So a couple of the questions that I'm going to run through with the good doctor are, you know, we're going to look at an introduction to gut health and diabetes. What is the relationship between gut health and diabetes? How does the imbalance in our gut microbiome affect our blood sugar levels? Now, I have to be honest with you, this is not even something I thought of until our awesome producer, Sina Pabetsi, sent me the topic. And I was like, wow. Because for me, I was focusing on our gut health really being about, you know, the correlation to all of our different energy systems, to our lungs, to our brain, to our ability to avoid brain fog, our ability to take up nutrients into our system. And I didn't think about blood sugar and glucose levels and our gut health. So that's what we're going to be answering on. Then we're going to touch on the topic of probiotics and insulin sensitivity. Now, I'm 53 and watching my social group get older. And as we age, there's always a greater risk of the increase in insulin sensitivity. I remember reading something a couple of years ago with the correlation with age increasing, where sort of at 50, it's 50%, at 70, it's 70%, at 100, it's almost 100%. So that's something I'm looking forward to chatting to the doctor about. And how can probiotics really play a role in improving insulin sensitivity in type 2 diabetes? Also, gut inflammation in diabetes. You know, what is chronic low-grade inflammation? And this is really something that can affect us without us really being aware of it. And always these low-grade inflammations or low-grade infections are something that we really do need to keep an eye out for, because they can affect our overall well-being, our energy. And we all know what it's like when our energy just crashes. We don't even have enough energy to get through the work day. We then have to come home and, you know, look after the kids, prepare meals, engage with our partners, engage with our children, at the point when our energy is almost non-existent. So low-grade inflammation, these other low-grade infections, these are things that we really have to watch out for. And it's low-grade inflammation is often linked to gut health issues and to diabetes. So can probiotics reduce gut inflammation? And what would that impact be on helping us manage diabetes? Another question that I'm going to be discussing with the doctor. And again, please do let us have your questions in studio on 061-895-1019. This show is for you. It's to answer your questions. It's to share information and knowledge with you, getting in touch with the best experts that are out there so that you can be well informed about your health. We're going to look at gut bacteria and glucose metabolism. How do specific strains of gut bacteria influence glucose metabolism? Now, these are things that I didn't even think of, and I'm involved in wellness and in health for a living. So these are things that are so important to consider and to manage. You know, are there particular strains of probiotic that are beneficial to people with diabetes? I'm really looking forward to chatting to the doctor about that one, because since I've been taking Proven, what I've actually seen, which really interests me, and I'm looking forward again to chatting with the doctor about this, is my appetite has gone down. So I used to be a very big eater. I think I still am a very big eater. There's a certain kosher restaurant in our community many, many years ago when they first opened, that on a Saturday night after 12 p.m., I think it was, they had a half price special. And I broke the record of eating 10 of their slider burgers. That's 120-gram burgers. I ate two 400-gram burgers, and I ate two massive hot dogs. And that's sort of what I could pack into my system quite comfortably. But since being back on the probiotics, my appetite really reduced, but it hasn't affected my energy in any way. Those are some of the questions we're going to be chatting with our fantastic guest, Dr. Nigel Plummer, a microbiologist. He's an expert in the field of probiotics. He's the owner of Proven, and he's been such an incredible source for us in terms of our gut health and the effect on the body. So we always do love talking to him. So Dr. Plummer, welcome back to the show. It's awesome to have you.
Thank you, Nicholas. Good morning. And we got a little bit caught out by the time changes.
Yeah, today. 2 hours.
So 2 hours, yes, it's 2 hours. And it called me out. So, because you don't change now, do you? You don't change at all.
No, we don't.
We change. So it's either 1 hour or it's 2 hours. So, so yes, how are you?
All good, thank you. Had a fantastic weekend. We had the Absa Bank Jewish Achievers Awards over the weekend. It was over 800 people, and just the opportunity to listen and experience the stories shared by some of our business leaders and legends. Absolutely amazing. One of the award winners was Trevor Rabin. The musician, started a band, Rabbit, in South Africa, and his incredible career. So just to hear these wonderful stories was very, very uplifting and a lot of fun. And what I was just touching on, though, you know, since I started Proven, which really helped me, you know, sort of with the stress that I'm dealing with, is, Doc, my appetite, I don't have the need to eat as much as I used to eat. So I'm blaming you for that. So and I was only taking the 25 million, not the 50 million strain. Yeah. So looking forward to touching on that. Maybe we could kick off with that, but also how are you? How are you doing?
I'm very well, Nicholas. I'm very well. I was in Macedonia and the Balkans, so Serbia and Bosnia last week, and I was at a conference. I was giving a lecture on autism and and the potential use of probiotics in autism, and it's quite an interesting subject, and it's one of those diseases that seems to be increasing all over the world, and they reckon that about 1 in 100 people worldwide is affected. And although if you look at the figures of people who are actually diagnosed, it's around about 1 in every 400, mainly children, obviously, and mainly males. But it's just a fascinating, because we still don't know what actually causes it, and yet it's becoming. And I'm sure that some of your listeners will know people who are on the autistic spectrum, and it varies. It can be as severe as an individual not actually speaking from the time that they're born and reaching adulthood and never speaking and never having any, and needing constant kind of care, and that will be the same for the rest of their lives. To the other end of the scale, people who individuals who have very productive and normal lives, but live with this, some people call it a gift of autism. And it was interesting. Just one example. There was a little boy, 9 year old autistic boy, and he'd become a painter, and he had his paintings, and they were very, very good. And very good for a 9 year old, abstract, and but also some other stuff. So yeah, just a very interesting, interesting way to spend a week. So sure. That was my few days.
Fantastic. So when we come back from our live read and our adverts, we're going to touch on diabetes and the correlation to gut health. I was just talking about all of these factors that I didn't even realize or take into account, the correlation between our gut health, sort of our blood sugar levels, and diabetes. So we'll get right to that straight after this break.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's National Diabetes Month, and we are chatting with Dr. Nigel Plummer. He's a microbiologist, he's an expert in the field of probiotics and gut health, and he's the owner of Proven. We want to chat about the correlation of diabetes and gut health. Let us have your questions on our WhatsApp number, 061-895-1019. Doc, let's chat about the correlation between gut health and diabetes. Can you explain the relationship between the two?
Let's maybe first of all start off and differentiate the two types of diabetes. So there's diabetes type 1, and diabetes type 1 is basically an autoimmune disease, and reasons for us developing type 1 diabetes are not clear, so the causes are not clear, but it tends to be during childhood, typically between sort of 2 and 10 years of age is when you first start to see it. And when we say it's an autoimmune disease is when the immune system starts to act against yourself, and the immune cells that really should be there to destroy bacteria and infections, they somehow get confused, and what they do is they then attack some of our own cells. And in type 1 diabetes, what in fact happens is they attack cells in the pancreas that produce insulin, and so and this is a non-reversible thing. So once these cells have been attacked and destroyed by our own immune cells, we can't replace them. And so that is why the people who have type 1 diabetes, as it progresses to its completion, and virtually all of the insulin cells in the pancreas have been destroyed by our own immune cells, then they have to have all of their insulin provided by the injection and so on and so forth. and that, and so, and that's a lifelong thing, and that you never get the immune cells, the pancreatic beta cells back, and the insulin back, and so these people are on insulin for the rest of their lives. The only way that you might reverse that potentially in the future is if you have some kind of stem cells treatment that may be able to, if you like, recreate the pancreatic beta cells. But that's rarer, although it's increasing. Again, it's one of these diseases which is increasing, and we don't know why. It seems to be associated with not so much genetics, but environmental factors, and we don't know why. We may have it seems to be set off by infections, maybe by extensive use of antibiotics, whatever it might be. We're not really clear. But that's type 1 diabetes. And then we have type 2 diabetes, which is much more common. This is the type of diabetes that people tend to associate with. It comes later in life, typically. It is associated with, it tends to be associated with obesity and a thing called metabolic syndrome, whereby we have, is that our tissues become resistant to insulin. And so the insulin, although we are producing it, it doesn't work anymore, or it doesn't work as well. And in its most severe form, type 2 diabetes, as we call it, that also you need to have insulin, you need to have your insulin topped up. But it's not as if your insulin is not there. You are producing it, but your tissues, if you like, are resistant to insulin. And we call that resistance to insulin, and where our tissues are not sensitive to it anymore. And so what in fact happens then, you have, if you like, raised sugar levels in the blood and so on and so forth. And all of the downsides then of diabetes, and the implication of type 2 diabetes, is it raises the risk of cardiovascular disease, so heart disease, stroke, and so forth, as well as being there's links between diabetes and things like Alzheimer's, for instance. Mm-hmm. And because diabetes, type 2 diabetes tends to develop later in life, that's when we tend to also, if you like, be more at risk of heart disease, stroke, and Alzheimer's anyway.
Right. The type 3 diabetes, is that sort of the Alzheimer's, or sort of what people are calling?
Yeah, I mean, some people there mentioned that. It's where it has implications upon the brain and so on and so forth. And it's difficult to sort of... One of the things that is important about type 2 diabetes is that it is potentially reversible. Mm-hmm. in that there are a lot of cases whereby the diabetes comes as a result or comes alongside obesity. Not always. I mean, you have some people who have type 2 diabetes, and you have children who have type 2 diabetes, but they tend to be overweight, and it tends to be associated with obesity and overweight, but you can, if you like, reduce the symptomology, reduce the effects to the point where it's almost an undetectable level if you then lose weight. So there mm-hmm. is a certain amount or number of people who have type 2 diabetes, and if they are, as I say, if they are obese and their diabetes is kind of related to the obesity caused and being driven by the obesity, then if they lose weight, then they'll see those type diabetes symptoms subside.
Right.
So it doesn't say it happen in all cases, but diabetes is an obesity and metabolic syndrome related disease.
Okay, so now, how is our gut biome affecting sort of our sugar levels and diabetes?
Well, there isn't. I mean, if you there isn't a what I would say is a direct link. What we are finding is that I mean the gut microbiome, this fantastic community of bacteria that we have in our gut, 100,000 billion bacteria, that it has impact on many parts of our physiology. And what we're seeing now is that it potentially has an impact upon diabetes as well. And so, and what we're seeing is that certain patterns of the microbiome that tend to be also associated with obesity are associated with diabetes as well. And if you change the patterns of the microbiome, you might see some of these diabetes symptoms declining.
Right.
Now, and when we talk about probiotics, so probiotics, as you know, Nicholas, what we've said before, all that these are kind of proxies for our microbiome. When we make a probiotic, all that we're doing is taking what we consider to be the most beneficial members of this vast community of our microbiome. We basically isolate them. We then purify them and concentrate them, and then put them back via a probiotic, a capsule, whatever it might be, a powder. And typically then, when the person takes them, they're taking a higher number. The idea is that these are the most beneficial organisms, and if you're giving them in higher numbers than are there typically anyway in the gut, higher numbers than are there, then you might get even greater benefits. And that's what we're tending to see with probiotics. That's what's so exciting, that this theory, this idea is actually occurring, that when we do clinical trials, we see this happening. And so, like I was saying, what we're beginning to see now is that what probiotics can do is they can have an impact whereby they make the tissues sensitive again to insulin, and they lower, let's say blood sugar levels, and they start to help if you like in the regulation of insulin. Because bear in mind, it is not like type 1 diabetes. The pancreas is still producing insulin, but it is producing it, but it's not having any effect in terms of driving sugar into the tissues, like our muscle tissues and our fatty tissues. It isn't driving it in. And so it's keeping it in the blood, and that gives you the hyperglycemia and the high levels of sugar that you see in the blood, because the insulin is not regulating our sugar correctly.
Right.
So what we're seeing, as I say, is the probiotics are having impact in terms of helping this regulation. The problem is we're not totally sure why at the moment. But we know that there is that effect.
Can we? Go ahead.
Right, no, go on. Go on.
Yeah, can we sort of touch on? And I know you've run multiple clinical trials, but I think there's also sort of like you want an older pilot flying your plane, because they have a lot of experience in situations and they can draw sort of conclusions between different things. The same with a doctor and a doctor of your experience, sort of. To use a term, and what does your gut tell you about the correlations? So have you got any ideas sort of that might be sort of proven in the future that might come to the floor for probiotics and insulin sensitivity, that sort of correlation?
Well, one of the things let's go back to the obesity thing at the moment, and then we'll kind of drive it through from there. So obesity, when somebody is overweight but not obese, and overweight can be, when they've got some subcutaneous fat and it's distributed sort of evenly over the body. So it's what you used to say is somebody's plump, let's say.
Yep.
Then they've got their fat cells are expanded, and so the fat cells have kind of grown. So they're larger than normal, but they are still normal. Now, the person who is obese, even if it's abdominal obesity only, those fat cells have become so engorged with fat that they've become inflamed. Mm-hmm. So and that's why we consider in obesity being an inflammatory disease. And when somebody is morbidly obese, all of that fatty tissue that they have is inflamed. So they have, if you like, a chronic inflammatory condition in the same way as, let's say, rheumatoid arthritis mm-hmm. is a chronic inflammatory condition. But you see the manifestations of that and you have pain and so on and so forth in terms of rheumatoid arthritis, people who suffer from that. And the pain comes from it being, if you like, a chronic inflammatory condition. Obesity is also a chronic inflammatory condition. And all of those, that tissue, the more obese you are, the more inflamed you are. And it's the inflammation that what we now know is that then causes things like cholesterol buildup. Mm-hmm. So you can get atherosclerosis, so the hardening of the arteries and buildup of plaques within the arteries. Sometimes that can be caused by there being excessive cholesterol. That's what people kind of understand. Excessive cholesterol gives you atherosclerosis.
Right.
But you can also get atherosclerosis, and atherosclerosis is the biggest cause of a heart attack. So atherosclerosis, and when the lesion bursts, you get a blood clot, if you like, that can cause heart attack. It can also cause stroke. And what you can get is atherosclerosis and that, if you like, higher risk of heart attack and higher risk of stroke, even if your cholesterol is normal, if you have a chronic inflammatory condition. So if taking, let's say, people who have rheumatoid arthritis, the most common cause of death in people who have rheumatoid arthritis, because it's a chronic inflammatory disease, is not rheumatoid arthritis, it's cardiovascular disease.
Sure.
Because the rheumatoid arthritis, in a sense, doesn't actually kill them, but the fact that they're chronically inflamed then has this implication in giving you a much higher risk of developing atherosclerosis and heart attack and stroke. And that's what ultimately, if you have rheumatoid arthritis, you have a much higher risk of dying from cardiovascular disease because it's a chronic inflammatory condition.
Right.
So going back to what I was saying, if you're chronically inflamed, that also drives the development of diabetes. And so diabetes is also a result of a chronic inflammatory condition. So if you're chronically inflamed, that status drives, if you like, the tissues to become resistant to insulin. Remember I was saying tissues are resistant to insulin. If those tissues are chronically inflamed, like the fat tissues, and if it's the chronic inflammation spreads throughout the body, that is what makes the receptors in the cells resistant to insulin. So chronic inflammation drives the development of type 2 diabetes. And obesity is a chronic inflammatory disease. So you can see there how that link develops. Obesity is a chronic inflammatory disease. Obesity drives the development of type 2 diabetes, and hence you have this link. And type 2 diabetes then, along with chronic inflammatory disease, raises your risk of let's say heart attack and stroke and so forth and Alzheimer's disease.
I absolutely
don't know if that's I don't know if that explains it well, or if it's as clear as mud, Nicholas. But that's basically how it works.
As clear as very, very good crystal. So it was absolutely fantastic, Doc. I said that's why I love our chat, because I learn so much, and I know that our listeners do. Because thinking of obesity as an inflammatory disease is a lot more empowering than thinking that we are weak-willed and can't manage our food intake. Absolutely fantastic. So I want to chat to you after our ad break, sort of like, why is my appetite and my need to eat so much decreasing since I've been on Proven? So we'll get back to that after this ad break. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offer convenient and professional care to you, help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem pharmacies. Better health starts here.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You are listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. It's National Diabetes Month, and we're chatting with gut health expert and owner and founder of Proven, Dr. Nigel Plummer, about the correlation between diabetes, gut health, and probiotics. And just before we went to the ad break, we were talking about how diabetes relates to gut health, from obesity as an inflammatory disease. And I wanted to ask the doctor a question. Since I've been taking Proven, and it's been a huge help given the amount of travel and sort of not sleeping at home, not sleeping in my own bed, eating different foods, not getting always the ultimate, the foods that I would like to be eating. Perhaps the last sort of few months has been a lot more refined carbohydrates, because that's all that really was available to me. But since I've been taking Proven regularly, it's been about 6 weeks, nearly 2 months, Doc, why has my appetite decreased, and why has my desire to go like this, push the plate away, even before I'm finished? You know, to give a wonderful example, at a sushi buffet, I could eat 20 plates. Now it's sort of 7, and I'm really happy.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things that to give you an honest answer, I'm not sure. It's not something we hear very often that Proven could be an appetite suppressant. But let me give you a sort of clue as to what may be going on. And this is comes from the research that we've done, published clinical research. And if you remember, but we have a product which is called ShapeLine, Proven ShapeLine, and we did two very large clinical trials looking at the impact that Proven ShapeLine could have on weight loss. And in both of those trials, we found a very significant in terms of a very, very consistent weight loss effect. And just to recap, we found that, and we gave the people Proven for 6 months, and what we found was that at the end of that 6 month period, and it was mainly off of their waist, and it was overweight people rather than obese people, generally speaking. But if we say overweight people, and overweight is where you have a BMI of between 25 and 30. So I'm overweight. I'm about 27, something like that. So I'm obesity is defined as a BMI of over 30. Now you can make the arguments about BMI. If you've got a muscle man, he's got a massive BMI, but he's not, he's obviously not overweight or fat. I mean, it's so. But generally speaking, for BMI is a reasonable measure, and what we found was that people who were taking Proven, the whole group of people who were, that we had 250 people in this trial, ranging from age of 30 up to 60. Across the whole group, they lost about 3 pounds off of their waist, and that ended up being like an inch off of their waist. That was for the whole group. But then we started to look at people who were older, and started to look at people who had higher cholesterol level. So the people who are older, so the ones who are over 45, so 45 to 60 year olds, they lost about 5 pounds off of their waist. over that six-month mm-hmm. period. The people who were older and had a higher cholesterol level, they lost 7 pounds. And this is not taking any other dietary intervention or altering their exercise or their lifestyle in any way. So the only thing that they did was take the proven probiotic. And so if you have a higher cholesterol level and you're over 45 years of age, they lost 7 pounds without doing anything else. And that was off of their waistline. And they lost nearly 2 inches off of their mm-hmm. of their waistline, doing nothing else. So the idea is why? Okay, why? Why? First of all, it was a great outcome. And we repeated the trial and we got the same effect. So it was a great outcome. It's not an outcome if you want to lose, 20 pounds or 10 kilos in 2 months, then the only way you can do that is to go on a calorie controlled mm-hmm. diet. You've got to cut your intake and increase your expenditure. Now there's no other way of doing that. But if you don't want to do that, you're fed up with dieting and all the rest of it, and you've got this little troublesome little tummy, little sort of muffin top, the women call it, and a beer belly for the men. If you've got a little bit of that, then this works very well. Okay, why? One of the things that we know is that, so we come back to cholesterol. Now, in our gut, we have a thing called bile. So the bile is produced by the liver. It's stored in the gallbladder, and then it is released. The function of bile is to help us digest fat. So what the bile does is it enables us to digest and absorb fat. Now, what this probiotic can do is it deconjugates the bile, and when it deconjugates the bile is not nearly as effective mm-hmm. at absorbing fat. Now, it gets a little bit complicated. Now, what we normally do when we produce the bile, the bile works, it helps us absorb fat, and then we reabsorb it. So it recirculates. So it goes into the first part of our gut and it's reabsorbed from the last part of our gut. And then it's ready to then recycle back to when you have your next meal, you produce bile mm-hmm. again, et cetera, et cetera. When it's deconjugated by the probiotic, we can't reabsorb it. So it gets excreted.
Right.
So you get a higher level of, if you like, this deconjugated bile in your feces. Now, the point is, this bile is made up of cholesterol. So the building blocks of our bile. So think of bile as being a big, kind of big lump of cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
So when we are deconjugating it with the probiotic, and we're excreting more in our feces, we're excreting cholesterol. And what happens then is that because it's not being reabsorbed, but we need the bile for the next meal.
Mm.
What the body says is, oh, I haven't got enough bile. I haven't got enough bile, and so I need to make some more bile. So I need cholesterol to make the bile. So it takes cholesterol from the blood,
right,
and makes the bile. And what that means is that your cholesterol level in your blood starts to go down. And that's what we saw in this trial, that when you take Proven.
Yes.
Your cholesterol, your LDL cholesterol, the bad
cholesterol,
that goes down when you take, and we saw that in this clinical trial. So the people who had the higher cholesterol levels, their cholesterol level went down significantly because they were taking the probiotic. Now, to come back to your point, when we deconjugate the bile acids,
right,
and the bile, and it's excreted. It has one other thing. Because the bile is not there, when it's deconjugated, it can't absorb the fat. So what we think is that the reason we're seeing the weight loss,
right,
is that there's a little bit of fat, maybe 5% of the fat that you're eating, that is not being digested and absorbed.
Right.
And that's being lost in the feces as well. So you're not absorbing quite as much fat. And over a period of time, mm-hmm. that's given you the weight loss.
The
effect.
Weight loss.
Now,
so, going back, Doc, can we just need to run to an ad break, and then we can pick up on that point afterwards. I love this. I'd love this to be a 5-hour show. Thank you. We'll be back after this ad break.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You are listening to 101.9 High FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday. I'm chatting with Dr. Nigel Plummer. I'm speaking fast because we've got a little bit of time left and we're covering such amazing stuff with Dr. Plummer with relation to probiotics, to Proven, to weight loss, and obviously to diabetes as it's Diabetes Month. Doc, just in wrapping up, and sorry for cutting you short, the sense I got from today's conversation is, and for me, the question also that I wanted to ask is almost, could I be feeling fuller sooner and not wanting to eat more because my system is getting more efficient? I'm getting the sense of those satiation points sooner because the gut's getting more efficient. And the other question is, I think probiotics, I mean, we just, if our system is more efficient and healthier, everything is healthier. Could we touch on those two points, please?
Okay, yeah. And I think just coming back on those, I think it's certainly the way that you're, when you're taking a probiotic, it's rebalancing your gut. And most of us have got a level of imbalance in our gut, in our microbiota. Some of it, some people have got a severe, what we call dysbiosis, a severe imbalance, and that can give, if you like, the symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome. So,
right,
you know, pain and bloating and so on and so forth. But even if you haven't got that, then most people, if they've been on any kind of antibiotics in the last couple of years, that tends to be the cause of this dysbiosis. And by taking probiotics, you will rebalance it, and they have multiple effects. In terms of health benefits,
mm-hmm.
and you'll feel those health benefits. You will feel better. You will feel as if you've got more energy. You will sleep better. Lots of these things. Just coming back to that point, that last thing I was talking about, just to sort of round it off, because mm-hmm. there was one thing there that comes back to your
yes.
appetite, which was that because when you're taking this, like this Proven Shape Line, because what we think is that you're not digesting just a little bit of fat, the fact that you're not digesting that fat, that sends a signal. The fact that the fat mm-hmm. is still present, just a tiny amount in your gut hasn't been digested, that sends a signal back to the appetite suppressors in the brain, and they
right.
go, well, don't eat anymore because we've still got a little bit left here that we haven't digested yet. So, and that is a very well known thing, that if you've got, that you have receptors in the rear of the gut, that if there is undigested food, then they send a message to the brain, to the appetite receptors and in the brain, and they say, okay, tell this person to stop eating because mm-hmm. we're still trying to digest what they've eaten before. It's an interesting, and so wow. that might be yeah. where you're seeing this. So,
fantastic. Doc, unfortunately, we have to leave it there. I'm really sorry.
Okay.
We've run out of time. It's always been fantastic chatting to you. Dr. Nigel Plummer, founder of Proven, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. And
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. We look forward to chatting to you again. You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday here on 101.9 High FM. Thank you for joining us.